Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
Sidney Crosby, the golden goal!
A division of Bell Media.
You're listening to a special summer edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Go, Dad, go! Go, Dad, go!
On Sports Radio 1290.
One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's continue on in the conversation. Let's go to Craig in West K. He's on line one. Craig, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, Craig. Thanks for holding. You're taking the angle about there's too many teams in the league, something which I agree with.
Well, as long as you got 30 teams, you're going to have fighting. And it's because it's about money. Owners cannot afford to take fighting out because it's entertainment. And when you got 30 teams, you don't have the talent that you would if you had, say, a 20-team league. There's players in the NHL that obviously wouldn't even be in this class or even playing right now 15, 20 years ago. And it's about putting the people in the seats. When you've got most of your teams in the southern half of the United States, and when you're talking Americans, you're talking slap shot, and growing up with that type of mentality, you if you take away fighting, Nashville, Tampa Bay, Florida, people aren't going to come out. Or if they do, it'll be half the crowds.
Craig, I agree with you, and we appreciate you calling in. And, you know, if you heard, I'm not sure if you heard, you know, Gary Lawless on earlier, he was mentioning that it wouldn't have that big of an impact. And if it did, was going to have that impact, they shouldn't be keeping it in the game for that reason. But if you've ever been to the U.S. or if you've ever taught southern U.S. I'm talking about, or spoken to people from the southern U.S., that's one of the things they love about hockey. And absolutely, I'd have to agree with you 100%
it's because to them it's not a sport. It's basically no different than going to watch one of the roller derby. It's just they're paying money to see blood. And we've changed the NHL over the course of 20 years and made it that. Because it's all about money. They wanted the dollars that the football and baseball, and they tried to match NASCAR, and they wanted the people watching. And the only way they can do that is by having two goons pound each other in the head where the people are up and screaming. And you take that away, it's going to have less ratings than lawn bowling.
I'd argue that if you were to employ the fourth liners in an offensive manner, you know, like the Robbie Schrem types, who were, you know, fourth line, high skill guy who can drop in once in a while, I honestly think that you'd probably end up with better results. And with better results, you'd be winning. And with winning comes fans, and with fans, you know, comes money. So I'm not so sure I agree with the point. I understand the premise. I'm just not so sure I necessarily agree.
Maybe we should be looking at the fact that, why are we trying to admit that fighting is not part of hockey? Because it is. And we can argue about how science is, we can learn more from science, but science doesn't change the game. The game is the game. And just because science comes in and we now know more, we should be trying to do more maybe to protect our players.
Well, what I want to know is the concussions. And sorry to interrupt there. What I want to know is concussions. Are concussions from hits from behind and blindside hits more so than they are fighting? Then why don't we prioritize the other issues first and then deal with fighting? Because fighting is a consensual act.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, why are we talking about fighting?
Like, I agree with you as far as the game being the game, you know, and not changing. I happen to agree with you. I would give the analogy that taking fighting out of hockey it's tough to compare sports. They're all very different.
Absolutely.
But in football, wouldn't it be like taking sacking the quarterback out of the game?
Yeah. No, exactly. Like, what, are they just going to go up to him and tap him now, and that's it, the play's over? People are not going to be interested in seeing that. They want to see the hit, right? And it's just when we're talking about this rule, even if you notice, why is it hockey? We're always trying to change it. You never hear about baseball.
I agree.
Yeah, it's always, okay, we got to make the nets bigger. We got to make the nets smaller. Move the blue line out. Put it back. You know what? Just leave the game alone.
The game, the people who run the game don't have any self-esteem in the game. That's the problem with that.
Yeah. I don't agree with that.
Craig, I agree with that. Craig, I'm trying to change it.
Appreciate the call. Thanks very much, Craig.
I don't think it's self-esteem. I think there's
if they thought the game was so great, they wouldn't always be tinkering with these ridiculous research and development camp and rules.
I don't mind the camp because they're trying to get grow the game, but they have to stop doing making drastic changes every. You know, again, we talked about last week. Crease, big crease. If you watch a game from before, crease, different size. Net far out from behind the boards, touch up offsides to get rid of that. I mean, they do a bunch of things that they end up reverting back. You know, they move the net out, they move the net back. They made the crease bigger, or I don't know what they do with the crease, but look at the touch offsides, they got rid of it, they brought it back. All these ideas, they make the league look experimental. Try them out in the BCHL, don't try them out in the NHL.
To Richie's point, though, for those who were listening earlier, when Richie mentioned that they have to take out stage fighting when a guy like Pierre-Luc Letourneau-Leblond goes up against Cam Janssen,
it's useless.
You can easily take that out of the game and make fighting more of a natural part of the game. And everyone sees when those guys are on the ice. They know why they're out there. It's obvious. I believe that there is a very easy way to improve fighting as part of the game. I really do. And I don't think that you have to take fighting out completely. I will go as far as to say, I am a traditionalist, I guess. I grew up, you know, watching Jets games and fighting Sean Cronin and Ty Domi, all those
Sean
guys.
Sean Cronin couldn't play hockey.
But what I'm saying is you should take guys like that out
of
the
game. I agree with that.
Ty Domi, he could score 15 goals.
Yeah, well, I thought that was the best point I've heard. Richie made that point when he was talking about Iginla. Look, I'd be perfectly fine if they got rid of hockey altogether. I think the... fighting altogether.
Then we would be a lawn bowling show.
The scientific evidence is more, I mean, is just so damning in that they shouldn't be able to, in conscience, continue with the way it is now.
It's the evidence.
But I would agree. But I think that would also, I would also say that's the case with the equipment they wear and everything else.
They want to change the rules on icing. They don't want to change the rules on icing, which will protect players. They don't want to do anything. They want to make the net clear on the top for the three goals a year that actually matters, that you can see it on the 40 video replays. But they don't want to change equipment. They don't want to change icing.
Nero fiddles while Rome burns. That's what they're doing. They're fiddling around with all this nonsense.
Yep.
And the game is burning because the best player in the game is not going to be able to play.
And that had absolutely nothing to do with fighting.
It had nothing to do with fighting, but it had everything to do with the equipment.
It's the respect.
It had everything to do with the equipment.
It's a blind side.
Equipment and respect amongst players has gone down every single year, you know, since the early 90s.
But the same thing as the PA in baseball. They you protect the players. Do you really protect players of all these guys likely on steroids?
No. I mean, football and hockey are the two sports right now that are on the precipice of having to change the way the game is because of the long-term health ramifications that these people are suffering.
The difference is, if you take out fighting or certain things from hockey, these guys have weapons in their hands. Football doesn't have that.
No, but the...
But football, at the same time, every play generally ends in a collision. Every play, there's collisions. Hockey, there doesn't need to be.
No. But it's the armor. It's the body armor. That's the problem right now. I mean, in addition to the fighting, I think they should get rid of the fighting. That's my own personal opinion.
Yep.
We talk about Don Cherry. If Don Cherry's NHL, there'd be as many concussions. He wants to get rid of the equipment. Sorry, this crazy equipment. He wants to get touch-up icing. You might get rid of a lot of concussions.
He has a lot of good ideas.
Yeah, and so he wants to have fighting in the game. Sure, he pays way too much attention to the strictly the guys who are fighters who aren't very good like he was. But a guy like Iginla, who he gives credit to, I'm okay with that. And Iginla LeCallier fight, like in the finals, 7 years ago now. Wow.
Yep.
That's fine. That's in the emotions of the game. That's trying to get your team going. But you can make a difference on the ice. And so you are really sacrificing. You're sacrificing 5 minutes of game time because you really think it's going to make a difference. It's not a sacrifice for George Larac to fight because he stinks anyways.
Let's go to line three. Andrew in Crescentwood, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. I got a way to prevent concussions. Why don't they just tighten their chin straps on their helmets or maybe change the helmets a little bit so they don't have that double impact when they smack their heads against the ice or boards?
And that's a factor, but, I mean, Paul Kariya did that and he still got nailed.
But, like, why don't you change it like football? I'm not saying that hockey should put football helmets on, but change the helmets because
I agree.
Those helmets are shit. Oh, sorry, but they're not good.
Our 7-second delay.
Yeah.
No, the helmets just aren't working, I don't think. And you see them when they hit their head on the ice, their helmet hits first and their head hits the helmet.
Andrew, on that point, I don't think any one of us are going to argue with you. I would have to say that's also a problem. I mean, that's another reason why the NHL hasn't made it mandatory for everyone to wear visors, because a lot of these guys, they don't like them. They don't like the way it feels, and they think it takes away from their image, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you can't see their face, so they don't have FaceTime on National Hockey League networks.
That's why Drew doesn't wear a visor.
That's the only reason why
Drew doesn't
wear a visor.
Drew's got a lot of FaceTime. He's worried about his brand.
My brand is very important to me. It's not, you know, this is a million-dollar face right here. That's what I got right here. Let's wrap it up. Let's go to commercial. When we come back, we're going to take, I think, another call, and then we'll go to Kyle.
Yep.
So you're listening to the
Illegal... Can we talk about the Jets penalty? We'll talk about that at 7:45.
Richie wrote a great article on IC.
We're running out of time. 7:45.
No, no, no. 7:45. Sandwich talk.
Sorry, there's too much going on. Anyways, we'll fit it in. Don't worry, Richie. I won't leave you stranded. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. In the evening, shortly thereafter. Welcome
sure,
back.
Why are you all alone in the studio?
I don't know. I'm not sure where you guys went. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I thought we had more time.
Obviously. I'm not sure. You guys have bad frames of reference,
Here's
obviously.
Here's Richie.
There you go.
Here he is.
Let's continue on. Let's go to Chris. He's on line one. He's calling from Hazel Ridge. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, guys, for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I want to reiterate what that other caller talked about, helmets.
Yeah.
First of all, a hockey helmet is more like a bike helmet. It weighs like half a pound. There's no protection in it whatsoever. I've played football. When you put one of those helmets on, it's more like a motorcycle helmet. You're built for impacts. You're built for collisions. It's definitely the case where the NHL, everything else they're trying to do is make it look like the NFL to attract sponsors and fans. They might as well go to a hockey or a football helmet in place of a hockey helmet, unless the hockey companies are going to build up the armor to protect the head and back off the armor everywhere else.
Chris, you know what? I agree with you to a certain extent, but hockey companies like CCM, the big ones, Nike and Bauer, they have made helmets. And you are right, though. I mean, some helmets are too light, but it comes down to maybe that in football, there's a uniform helmet. You wear one helmet. It's not like there's a big difference in football helmets.
Well,
you'd agree with that, right?
There's a few different brands out there, but
generally, they're the same, though.
Helmets you could go through a brick wall with and probably come out living.
Right.
A hockey helmet, quite honestly. On top of it is the culture. Let's talk about the bloody chin strap down at Gretzky's Adam Apple. That's what started all this, the hot dogging and all the rest of it.
Well,
they just simply don't take their protection seriously.
You know,
I
Richie,
played football 9 years, and honestly, guys, every time you came off that ball, you're hitting somebody's shoulder pad or helmet every time you had a collision. Now, hockey moves at a speed twice, three times, maybe four times as fast as a collision when those players hit each other, the boards or what have you. You know, it's time that hockey literally wakes up and says, you know, we need to protect the most important part of the body and back off the body armor on things like elbows and stuff like that.
Chris, let me ask you a question. You played hockey, or you played football for 8 or 9 years. Do you feel as though you have any long-term health related problems as a result of your football time?
Knees. When you play on the line, I'm the only guy that didn't have major knee surgery, partly because I knew I attributed to luck and because I knew how to fall. If I felt my leg getting grappled into a pile, I just fell down like a tree coming down, because I knew if I tried to fight it, my knee was probably going to get the most damage. And hockey players' knees are one of the things that goes as well, but yeah, there isn't a whole lot you can do there either.
Right.
You know, I just want to get back to the main point. I know Gary Lawless, the Rick Rippon thing has obviously got him on the warpath with fighting and hockey and that sort of thing. But, you know, the whole situation with Rick Rippon, God rest his soul, is there are ultimately a lot of critical factors in the individual that, let's just say it's risk factors. And when you take a hockey player and you mold them into that team protection or traffic cop, goon, whatever you want to call it, it does something psychologically to them. And I remember hearing stories from Probert, Joey Kosher, even Ty Domi. Ty Domi's mother absolutely hated what he did on the ice. So you can imagine the stress in his relationship with his own mother. And I remember him talking while he was still playing here how difficult a stressor that is. And I just think that, you know, it's time to really consider getting this out of the game.
Chris, appreciate the call, Chris. Thanks very much.
One other thing, guys. I just want to point out this whole deal about fighting versus stick work. If you put in meaningful penalties like they did for diving and that, now diving is all but eliminated. The trouble is when it's 5 minutes each for fighting, there's no penalty to the team. The goons have a mutually agreed to bout that neither one of them really wants. They both sit in the box. Neither team is penalized. So hockey is basically giving the nod to a fight culture. If you really wanted to have penalties like they do at football, which, believe me, is 10 times as violent as hockey. You just eject the guy, and the moment he takes a slug at another guy, not so much as even a fist fight, and it's over. And that's how football got it out, because let's be honest, if you allowed fighting in football, you'd have a bloody riot every time you had a game.
Chris, appreciate the call. Thanks very much.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thanks, Chris.
Great conversation from everybody. Appreciate all the phone calls. You know, a lot of passion still about this issue. I thought public opinion would sort of be shifting a little bit, but it doesn't seem to be, and that's obviously...
I don't agree with that. I think it is. Well, I don't think it's shifty. I think there have always been, Drew, people that don't want fighting as part of the game. I mean, I think that...
But now they have more scientific evidence than they ever had before.
But I think...
That fighting is bad, like that punching somebody in the head is bad
for you? I think...
There's a lot of people that are cognitive dissidents. People will ignore what the evidence says, even if it's obvious.
In 20 years, they're going to be crazy football games. They're going to be watching football, you know? And there's going to be guys.
I'm not sure that the football and hockey worlds aren't getting close to having to change. I'm really not.
How are you going to change football?
I don't know how you're going to do it, but I think that
flag.
Well, you know, not flag, but something where they're not allowed to, you know, use their bodies as human projectiles.
But that's part of
that's
the game.
Billion dollar deals in the NFL, million dollar deals in NHL.
But that's why
I just got a text from a friend of ours, and he said, you know, the NHL probably can't afford to alienate the fans of the game who really do like hockey, because literally can't afford it.
Yeah, no, I get that. I agree, and I think you're probably right. It probably all does come down to dollars and cents, and, you know,
teams are paying, you know, Ty Domi talks about how difficult it was for his mom to watch him. Well, Ty, nobody forced you to go out there and get in a fight. You wanted your $2 million a year. You did it.
And
you didn't have to do it.
He wouldn't be in the NHL if he couldn't fight. He was good. But fighting was a huge part
of the
game.
Go work on your game.
Drew, back to the equipment, though. If the lines are blurred, though, I think we're trying to get injuries out of pro sports, and specifically hockey and football. And I think that the equipment is a huge thing. And we've talked about it for the 2.5 years that we've been doing the show. And I think that's something they should be focusing on more. I think they should be making it mandatory to have had the safest possible helmet at all levels of hockey. The NHL guys should be forced to wear the safest helmets. I think that there should be a limit on the type of shoulder pads and elbow pads that you wear. You should not be allowed to wear the hard plastic. You should not be allowed to wear massive shoulder pads.
Remember,
I think that should be the focus.
It's also a choice, in a sense. I mean, you choose to be a fighter. A guy wants to make the NHL, so he chooses to fight because that's his best avenue to do so and to make hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, if he's a fan favorite. Nobody's forcing the guy to go fight.
Nobody's forcing anybody to play hockey either. Like, hockey is a violent game.
You could go do something else for your living and make whatever you're doing and not have this brain damage. You're choosing to do it. It's a cost-benefit analysis. The cost might be your head and how you function later on, and the benefit based on these guys is I get cash.
Right, and then if you don't want to play violent sport,
nobody
wants games,
to play.
You can play
go
golf.
Ahead.
Golf, tennis, play baseball. There's a lot of things.
I'm not saying I don't feel bad for these situations. I do, but they have options. They choose to fight.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. They do just a fight, but at the
rest
same...
Rest in peace, Derek Bugard. But Derek Bugard, you watch Derek Bugard play hockey? He was mean.
Yeah.
You watch him hit Alashemsky? He was mean. I mean, nobody forced him to play. He could have gone and done another job the rest of his life and done whatever he was doing. You know, obviously, those issues. I'm just talking about the fighting.
I understand what you're saying.
You don't have to do that. If you want to make $2 million or $1.5 million a year, okay. But you don't have to make $1.5 million a year. You don't have to fight.
But in society, that we have laws and rules that we prevent people from doing, even when they know the risks of doing it, and there's penalties for doing so. Why you know, you can't fight a guy? You can't have a bare knuckle fight with a guy in a parking lot, even if both people are willing participants.
Yeah, but you also,
why can you in hockey?
Drew, my answer to that would be you also don't get paid $1 million for 6 months of work. To bare knuckle
fight.
But we
take that. But I'm saying in society, we take that option away from people. We don't let them decide. Yes, this is worth it for me to do.
But they have the opportunity or the option of playing and then being within that rule. Right? They don't have to play hockey and subject themselves to fighting.
Hockey fans are paying $100. No different than in Roman times, people were going to watch gladiatorial spectacles.
I agree.
People are watching. It's a sport, a violent sport. Hockey and football, both violent sports. These are big guys, and as far as I'm concerned, Drew, you're just not going to change that nature of the game. I think there's safety, and I think actually fighting in hockey makes the game safer. That is Don Cherry's argument. That's why he doesn't like the instigator rule. Nobody's disagreeing with the hitting from behind and the stick work, but I mean fighting in itself serves the purpose. And I think that fundamental thing is going to be very difficult to convince people in the hockey world. And I mean, international hockey, I think the international hockey argument where, you know, Gary mentions the Olympic hockey, North American hockey isn't like Olympic hockey. You can't just all of a sudden make a sport, you know, international hockey is completely different. But
Stanley Cup Finals, I mean, Sean Thornton played for the Boston Bruins. Sean Thornton's a fighter, but Sean Thornton can play a bit.
And that's why the Bruins are the Stanley Cup champion. They don't play a goon. Let me ask you this. If the NHL tomorrow said we are banning the staged fights,
yep.
And we all know what the staged fights are.
Yep.
What, you know what you do? All you do is you get the linesman in the middle, and you don't let them fight. And then those guys become useless, and you don't sign them, yep. And you don't have them. You don't have useless fighting.
I agree. You could pragmatically take because the staged fighting out.
If it's an emotional fight, you can't get in the way because you don't see it coming.
Exactly. No, well, an emotional fight, I think you made a good point when it came to your argument about the emotional fight. That's in the heat of the moment. I'm talking about the staged fights. Let's focus more on that. If the NHL
easy
said...
Easy takeout. Easy.
So would you have any problem with that?
Not at all.
No, I wouldn't either.
Do you think the NHLPA, if that ended up costing 30 guys their jobs...
30 other guys to take those jobs.
Yeah.
For the same price.
Then you'd have 30 skilled guys.
The cap league, they have to spend money, right?
You'd have penalty killers.
You spend based on revenue. So you have to pay the money. 54% of revenue, whatever it is.
Let's say the NHL, let's assume that the NHL, each team employs one quote-unquote goon. And those goons, and they didn't replace those jobs. Each roster became a 22-man roster instead of a 23-man roster. Do you think the NHLPA would agree to letting those fights go away?
They'd agree if you added another team in the league. That's all. And you replace 22 jobs right there.
So really at no point in time does the health consideration factor in for the NHLPA.
Well, Donald Fair, who's a very smart guy, but ran baseball, steroids are bad for you. And lots of guys in baseball were on steroids during his tenure. He was protecting their rights to be steroids tested. In reality, by not letting them be steroids tested, he was hurting their health and hurting the choices that they're allowing them to make.
A player was
choices.
Recently, the first guy was suspended recently, was he not? I forget his name, suspended for 50 games. It's still
happens
there. Steroids are still
all the
baseball.
Time. No, it happens all the time now. Let's end it right there. Let's go to a commercial break. When we come back on the other side from the Globe and Mail, Matthew Sakaris is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show
on Sports Radio 1290.
.30 in the evening here on the Illegal Curve Hockey
Love
Show.
Love that, too.
Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And, of course, continually check out the website, www.illegalcurve.com. You can find all of our news and articles and everything posted there throughout the course of the week. Worth noting, we are on again Monday. Monday evening is our next show.
Yep.
So you can just a quick turnaround.
Monday
us.
Evening, and then next Friday, the Bombers are back after their bye week, and we can finally go to a game together.
It's been a while, Izzy.
I
know.
A month.
I've missed our time together. So, you know, let's.
Because
yeah.
we don't,
that.
Once again, we don't spend any time together
no,
off
aside
the show.
From that, that's it. So. Let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Matthew Sakaris of the Globe and Mail, thanks very much for joining us this evening. How are things?
Things are good. How are things in Swaggerville?
Oh, Swaggerville. A lot of attitude in the studio, a lot of attitude in the city.
What a great time to be a Winnipeg sports fan, huh? I mean, an NHL team coming back, the Bombers off to their best start in years. Well, I can only imagine. The last time I think I talked to you guys, we were talking in the possibilities of Winnipeg getting a team, and the Bombers weren't worth talking about. So, nice to see a turnaround for everyone there.
And the best part of it, there's been no mosquitoes this summer either, so we got everything's coming up Winnipeg right now.
You've hit the triple.
Yeah, exactly. You know, unfortunately, as we saw this week, unto all good comes some tragedy, and that is the passing of Rick Rippon. I mean, you covered Rick in your course of your work with the Canucks. You know, maybe for, you know, somebody who saw him on a real regular basis, maybe some insight into the kind of person he was, you know, what he brought to the table for the team, you know, how he was received in the locker room.
Yeah, well, I suppose I saw him more than the average person, but I don't think I talked to him much more than the average person. I had a handful of discussions with Rick over the course of his career and my time here in Vancouver starting 4 years ago. What I, you know, for the most part, he was unavailable to us guys. These leaves of absence that he took last year and the previous year, you didn't see a whole lot of Rick around the team at those times. And, you know, thinking back on that now, it's just so sad that his career and everything transpired as it did here in Vancouver, because this was a player who, you know, his underdog story, everybody falls in love with that, right? And then, you know, the fact that he was the fighter that he was with all his tactics and his ability to take on guys a foot taller, you know, David to the Goliath. I mean, he was an easy player to fall in love with for the fans. But, you know, in terms of, you know, a personalities on the Canucks and who was front and center on a day-to-day basis, that certainly wasn't Rick.
Matt, you know, switching over to the, we talked about the Canucks, obviously a somber in terms of Rippon. Back to, I guess, the reaction from the finals and obviously, you know, moving away from that now throughout the summer. You wrote an article in the Globe about the Canucks fans' anger and the Milan Lucic having to cancel a public celebration. Can you touch on that a bit and kind of give Winnipeg listeners that maybe hadn't read the article what exactly happened?
Yeah, well, Milan Lucic, of course, is a favorite native son of Vancouver, or at least he was until this past Stanley Cup. And, you know, I can't think of another player from these parts who does as many appearances and is so accessible to his hometown like Milan is. You know, he won a Memorial Cup here for the Giants. He was drafted here and always, you know, flew Vancouver's flag everywhere he went. And, you know, the fact that he had to cancel what he planned, a public celebration with the Cup down here on one of the big beaches, you know, to me marked an escalation in the sort of anger and backlash that's gone on with Canucks fans since the Stanley Cup. And, you know, it really presented a game changer, because every community, I think, you know, enjoys that summertime tour of the Stanley Cup coming to all these little points across Canada and everybody getting a chance to pose with it and all those things. And I'm sure there were some Canucks fans who didn't want to see it, but, you know, I guarantee if you had put that cup on the beach Saturday afternoon, there would have been a long lineup for photos and whatnot. And it was sad to me, because last year we had four members of the hated Chicago Blackhawks tour the Cup throughout BC pretty much without incident, and here we had a native son of Vancouver who had always been sort of a fan favorite amongst the hockey fans here, having to cancel his public celebration because of just worries, security concerns that, you know, someone might get out of hand.
Matthew, it's been over a week now since Dan Carcillo made some comments about Canucks players. He even mentioned Tanner Glass, who's actually
non-Canucks player.
Yeah, exactly. You said, you stole the words out of my mouth. Tanner Glass is actually a Winnipeg Jet now, and we're very happy to have him on. I'm a personal fan of his. Are any Canucks that are still... Hey, we'd had the discussion about fighting guys. You know I like scrappers. As far as the guys he mentioned, such as Max LaPierre, have you heard anything from any of these guys? Is this actually going to create any stir at all in Vancouver?
No, we haven't heard from anyone to start things. Max LaPierre is not someone who's addressed this. I'm not sure there is another Canuck, as a matter of fact, other than Max LaPierre remaining from Carcillo's list. I wouldn't necessarily think so, though I imagine that LaPierre will be a hated player when he steps on the ice in October, and not necessarily because Daniel Carcillo's calling him out, more so just the way he behaved throughout the playoffs. There was a real backlash against the Canucks and the way they played. You know, I have many friends across Canada who told me, you know, the series started, I was pulling for the home team, and by the end, I was rooting for the Bruins.
Yep.
And I understand that. And, you know, going back to your last question, I think that's sort of, you know, one of the things that's fueling the anger here in Vancouver is that, you know, not just the disappointment of losing a game 7 on home ice as they did, not just the embarrassment and the shame of the riots that came after that, but the fact that, you know, the rest of the NHL, the rest of the hockey world seems to be against them.
What did Maxim LaPerriere think of the comments?
I'm not so sure. I'm gonna have to give him a call.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Matthew Sakaris of the Globe and Mail. Matthew, the heart and soul of the Canucks arguably is Ryan Kesler. Can you give us an update on his health status after his hip surgery?
Yeah, all we know is he's going to be touch and go by the sounds of it for the start of the season. I don't expect that he's going to be up and doing much things in training camp, although with Ryan Kesler, I think it's going to be quite a chore for the Canucks staff to sort of manage him and keep him at bay. I think he's going to want to push them on this injury as he's pushed on every injury in his career. But there's a good chance that Ryan Kesler's going to miss the start of the season. We know Raymond's going to miss the start of the season. I expect, guys, a real fatigue factor from the Canucks coming back. I don't think they'll be a very good team in October. It has traditionally been Roberto Luongo's worst month, and I think there's a lot of tired guys, and there'll be enough guys missing out of the lineup that this won't be the team that gets out to the fast start, and I don't think is necessarily in line to do the sort of things they did last year in the regular season with 117 points and sort of pulling away from the field by the end of the regular season as the President's Trophy winner. I think this is going to be a much more difficult season on the Canucks. I think it's going to test their depth more than their depth's been tested before. And, I'm not necessarily sure they have the depth, or at least at the NHL level, that they did with last year's team.
It's an interesting point. We're going to ask you the next question about a player that they're adding for depth, being Marco Sturm. I'd say fresh legs, but Marco Sturm's had a fair amount of surgeries on both of those knees, so I'm not so sure how fresh they are. How much of a factor do you think he'll be? Do you think it's possible he can contribute close to what Mason Raymond did while Raymond recovers, or you don't think so?
Yeah, well, in terms of Raymond, are you talking the good Raymond or the bad Raymond?
Yeah.
Because when he's on, he's a guy who's skating and scoring and being a real offensive threat, as well as being a pretty decent defensive player. When he's not on, he's still a reliable defensive guy, but he's a maddening player in the offensive end and a peripheral one. So I'm not necessarily sure the bar based on Mason Raymond's last season is all that high for Marco Sturm. But the one thing that is pretty apparent is that the Canucks have a whole bunch of holes and jobs on the line, if you will, on the wing from the second line down to the fourth line. And I think guys like Marco Sturm, like Michael Samuelson, who's also coming back off an injury, guys like that and where they slot is going to be one of the bigger stories of training camp.
Canucks general manager Mike Gillis has decided to bring in a couple of older veterans in Owen Nolan and Todd Fedoruk. Two-part question. Do people actually think these guys are going to make the team, and do you personally think that they have a decent shot at making the team?
No and no. last year, Brendan Morrison, a all-time fan favorite here, came into camp on a professional tryout, had a very good camp. It was clear that he was going to get an NHL contract, and they still didn't keep him. And he wound up playing for Calgary. I think the odds, the position group is certainly weaker. There's no question that Owen Nolan and Fedoruk and really there are a couple other fringe sort of NHL, AHL wingers that they brought in. All these guys may have a more open window right now than Brendan Morrison did last year. But I'd be highly, highly suspect. I think that Nolan or one of these guys, Nolan or Fedoruk at least, could make the team. And I think that in part, guys, because of the players we're talking about and their age and all their other factors, but also because you're only allowed to keep a certain number of contracts. And that was one of the things working against Brendan Morrison last year. And I do think that the Canucks feel like they have more players when you combine the NHL and AHL ranks, who are worthy of a contract spot more so than an aging veteran.
On the back end, we haven't really touched on that. Obviously, Christian Ehrhoff bolted for Buffalo for a pretty inflated contract. Is the key to replacing Ehrhoff a better play from Keith Ballard, or is it more of a team effort?
Yeah, I think it's spread across several people, but you hit the right guy, Ballard. I mean, he's a $4 million defenseman. He's got to play something close to a $4 million defenseman. We saw very little of that last year. The other guy I think they're really counting on is Chris Tanev, the rookie who, made his NHL playoff debut last year. Really remarkable story, like 1 year removed from college hockey. And he's a guy who has a roster spot sitting there waiting for him at training camp. And I think if he closes down on that, the team is going to feel a lot better about their defense, because they're going to have a young player who's got upside, who's still growing and improving. And the rest of the players they have, as you know, with the exception of Ballard, who knows what he brings this year, the rest of the players, they sort of know what they're getting on that back end. I mean, Bieksa, Ham, Hughes, Sallow, these guys are known commodities. Rome, Albert's as a third pair guy. These guys are known commodities to the Canucks. The two big mysteries are Ballard and what do you get out of him, and Tanev, and does he take the big forward step this year that I think they hope he does.
We mentioned earlier, Matthew, Tanner Glass's addition to the Jets. Just, you know, quickly, obviously you've watched him play for the last couple of years. Maybe give the Winnipeg fans an idea of what he can bring to the table.
I mean, I'm sure you guys have discussed it before. I mean, he is what his reputation is. He's a pretty good skater, gets in on the forecheck, a more than willing fighter, can really be an effective physical player on some nights, is probably a little bit better with the puck than most people would give him credit for, and a pretty intelligent guy. I mean, he went to Dartmouth. You can ask him about his Scrabble wherewithal. I believe he's quite the Scrabble player. You know, a pretty intelligent player who I think on most nights understands what keeps him in the lineup, what he can't do, and isn't the type of guy who too often crosses the line with the coach. Now, he did do that a couple of times in the playoffs last year. There were a couple of times last year in the playoffs where I think AV sat him down, and we were surprised to see that, but sort of the margin of error at that point was so small, and Tanner made a couple of mistakes. Mm-hmm. That's all it took to sit him down. So, you know, certainly a guy who in Vancouver we didn't expect. We thought he'd be a depth player, and he wound up being a guy who, for the better part of 2 years, was a regular. And I think that says something about Tanner Glass.
Matthew Sakaris of the Globe and Mail, thanks very much for joining us this evening on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, Flaggerville. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Take care. Let's head to commercial break. When we come back on the other side, I don't even know how
Richie's Baba.
This. Richard's Baba is going to join us. I don't even know anymore. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. It's like the old organist that the Jets games used to play, Hava Nagila, all the time.
Still having those NHL games. Well, Remus plays them. Used to have them like NHL.
In New Jersey, they always play it.
Exactly. Well, we'll be in the game. We'll be at that Hockey Night in Canada
Devils
game
Jets in
New
November,
Jersey.
Baby.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to be exciting. We'll talk about that, of course, at a later date and time. Let's go to the audio vault of what happened on this show. Is about 2 weeks ago, shortly after.
On this show.
Not on this show. It happened on Hustler and Lawless shortly after we debuted the Illegal Curve Hockey Show sandwich.
They've had the gall, the unmitigated gall and nerve to suggest that there's some kind of sandwich war going on. Listen, there's no sandwich war going on. Harrison Steak and the good folks at Meyer's Deli approached Hustler and Lawless and begged us and paid us in seven-figure money so they could name a sandwich after us. My grandmother didn't walk in there and start banging the sandwich case demanding that they name a sandwich after me.
They've got a powerful network.
They do. Listen, hey, props to all the Babas in town that can, you know, can look after the little Richies, the little Ezzies, and the little Drew. You call them a Droopy? Is that what a little Drew is? They can look after them because, you know, like, listen, if you need someone to push... to pimp your sandwich? Who better than your grandma? I'm just saying, there's no sandwich war, fellas. There's an H&L, and then there's whatever else there is. But we're legit. You should quit.
Now let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Words I never really thought I'd say. Welcome to the program, Richard's Baba. Baba Tootsie, how are you?
I'm wonderful after listening to you and your illegal curb sandwich.
It
is out of this world, and it can't compare to the others that are advertised. Too bad.
I appreciate the kind words. Now, when you go to Meyer's Deli, as I'm sure you do quite often, and you have to choose between the Illegal Curve sandwich and the Hustler and Lawless sandwich, which sandwich do you usually pick?
There's no question about it. Of course, the Illegal Curb sandwich.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, that is the best endorsement we could have ever hoped for.
What, Baba, what do you think of the Hustler and Lawless sandwich?
It shouldn't be there. It can't compare to yours.
Bubba Tootsie, thank you for joining us tonight on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We, as always, appreciate of your time given to us.
Well, I still say that if Oscar Deli,
Myers
Deli, oi, I buggered that up.
You're doing great. Thank you, Bubba Tootsie.
Okay.
We'll see you later. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Props to all the Babas in town.
Absolutely. That was Richard's Baba. How much rehearsing did that take there, Richard?
Wasn't that much. She went off script.
You know, I want to say something. I love Baba Tootsie. And, you know, me and Richie have been friends for, what, 15 years?
It's a long time to be
after,
friends.
You know, 5 years or whatever, I'd met Baba Tootsie several times, and I was at a Pollock/Manuke family function, and, you know, Richie's mom, Maureen, goes, Baba, say hi to Ezzie. Ezzie's over. She goes, who's Ezzie? What do you want me to do? You want me to talk to him?
You just got an email, actually.
Yeah,
from...
I just read that. I think you're reading the same one from Chris.
That's right.
Yeah, from Chris Tembakis. He just emailed us out of Maui, Hawaii. He says he's a season ticket holder vacationing in Maui. He bought a new Jets t-shirt before he left on holiday.
Awesome.
Can't believe the amount of times he's been stopped by a Go Jets Go when wearing his shirt in Maui, Hawaii.
Maui, Wowie. That is awesome that Chris called in. I think that's our first ever email from Hawaii. That's awesome. That's good to hear. You know what? Jets get love everywhere. Everyone loves the Jets.
If you, between Bubba Toots and Chris in Hawaii, there's only one thing left to do, and that's to go to Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And Jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richie, I'll start with you.
With me?
Yeah, with you.
You know, I'm conflicted because what I want to do is I want to cheer Craig Heisinger in terms of the chance that he gave Rick Rippon and obviously the friendship that they had. I mean, this is a guy who didn't have to, you know, he combed parts of the WHL to find certain players. He found these players and he gave them a chance. A chance probably a lot of these guys wouldn't have had if not for that opportunity. And I think with a certain amount of loyalty that you don't see all the time, he gave these guys like Rick Rippon chances to grow and become what they did, what they are, what they did become. And I think that if not for guys like that combing and finding certain players who they, you know, he said if Michael was at the press conference and he said what really 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 drew him to Rick Rippon was after a game in Regina, WHL, his team got killed. And the next day he was out on the ice blocking shots. And I think that element in terms of looking for the small things and the loyalty factor deserves to be cheered.
Well put. Ezzy, I'll flip it over to you.
Yeah, obviously, Drew, with the passing of Rick Rippon, it's tough to do cheers and jeers. So, you know, I'm going to give a cheer, but it's obviously tragic news. And I speak for everyone when we say that our condolences and prayers are still with him and his family. I'm going to actually cheer Bobby Hull. You know, Ed Tate wrote an article, I believe it was yesterday or 2 days ago. Bobby Hull was consulted by True North and the Winnipeg Jets, and he gave Evander Kane the go-ahead to wear number 9. I think that's a very classy move. Bobby Hull was the first Jet to have his number retired at the old Winnipeg Arena. Bobby Hull is a class act for letting Evander Kane wear number 9 this year at the MTS Center.
Michael Remus, cheer or jeer?
I mean, cheer. You know, there's not a lot of hockey on TV being the summer, and I'm going to give a cheer to the NHL Network in the summer. I was at the Cottage on the weekend. It was great. Got to watch top 10 shootout goals of 03-04, top player performances, a lot of top 10s, a nice little Eric Lindros documentary. Great channel.
Did you get to, were you invited to the Islanders party?
Islanders
they
party.
They canceled it.
Yeah, they canceled it today. To watch the rewatch of that Pittsburgh Islanders fight game of all the fights this year.
Not to defend the Islanders, because I'm certainly not in their position, but apparently they've been re-showing like all their games.
Okay.
And it's not their decision. It was the decision of MSG Plus.
Well, if I have an option between going to Long Island or Dry Island, I'd go to Long Island.
Well, there you go. And guess what? We're going to be in the Long Island.
I'll tell you one thing. We're not going to be in Dry Island when we're in Long Island.
No, because otherwise we're going. Yeah. The Illegal Curve crew is taking a special trip. We're doing the Jets play in New York on the Thursday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yep.
And we're going to call that my bachelor party, and we're going to go there Thursday in Long Island, Saturday night in New Jersey, and then Sunday at MSG. We're going to see all three Jets games.
It's going to be an unbelievable trip, and Drew, it's for a great guy. Your bachelor party, it's going to be a trip of a lifetime. It's going to be so much fun.
I'm a big fan of a lean meat. I might as, you know what? That'll be my cheer. That might as well be my cheer for tonight.
Gary wants to meet Bubba Tootsie.
Gary, is that Lawless just messaged you?
Yeah, he's BBM. Yeah.
Okay, Lawless wants to meet Bubba. So we got a meeting of the minds going to be scheduled. Lawless versus Toots round three. I mean, I don't even know anymore. let's wrap this thing up before we get into any more trouble. We thank the following guests that have joined us this evening. James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail joined us earlier. Gary Lawless of Hustler and Lawless and the Winnipeg Free Press. And Matthew Sakaris of the Globe and Mail joined us at 7:30. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Eagle Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And always check out www.illegalcurve.com for latest Jets news and opinion pieces. Reminder, we're next on the air this coming Monday. So a quick turnaround. 4 days from now, we're on the air. So Monday, 6 to 8, you can join us. We're going to be joined by Kyle for sure. We had to preempt Kyle, so we're going to be joined by Kyle for sure on Monday.
We'll talk to you soon, KK.
And we're working on some other big guests for Monday's show. So follow us here, follow us on Twitter, and,
Drew, is your Bobby going to be on Monday?
Drew, I'm not sure.
To have you back, Drew.
Thanks. Yeah. It was a pleasure to be here with you guys, as always. For Richard Pollock, for Michael Remus, and for Ezra Gibbard.
And producer Tim.
And for producer Tim.
Come on,
Tim.
Drew.
My name is Drew Mindell. We wish you good night and good luck.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk Monday, August 22nd, right after H&L. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, exclusively on Sports Radio 1290.